Hello everyone and welcome to edition 188 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula 1 podcast, straight out of Norfolk, UK. We're also on Future Radio in Norwich and brought to you by our very proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online, where you can sign up for the game, enjoy your summer break for free by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. I am sports journalist Michael Bailey. Hello there. We are here at my house, bizarrely enough, to round up the Hungarian Grand Prix in the first half of the 2017 Formula One season. Just how generous was Lewis? Just how quick in testing was Robert Kubica? And just how cool was that image of Fernando Alonso under the podium at the Hungaroring? All that and more. Plus, we will, of course, dish out our Of the Weekend awards in one form or another. Joining us on the pod at my house this week, we have Damon Hill fan and Mustang owner Richard Baxter, hashtag point whore.
Good evening.
And two times Beckles kart champion Kyle Cumbers.
Good evening.
And the Oracle. It's been a while since we called you the Oracle, hasn't it?
It's been a while. I can't remember the last time Steve's won. Was he Steve won the last two?
Yeah, he's definitely a two-time champion. I don't know if it was the last two, but
it's been a while since I claimed the Prediction League title, so.
Well, this is a prediction-free zone pretty much in this podcast, but certainly when we get to the other side of the break, we'll be looking at how the standings lie and all that shenanigans. Hope everyone is well. A quick heads up, as I mentioned, this is the last pod we will do until the week before Formula One returns after its mid-season break. We will be asking for mid-season predictions at that point, so if you are fully involved in the NRF1 Prediction League, then make sure you get those predictions in for the second half of the season. You can predict absolutely anything you want. Just make sure they're in before the start of FP1 kicks off at Spa, and of course make sure you get in your Belgian Grand Prix predictions too with the same deadline. And if you feel you've missed any of our podcasts over the first half of the season and there are some absolute corkers in there, just head over to Audio Boom if you've missed any of the podcasts, nrf1.uk/audioboomf1, or if you just go to nrf1.uk, you'll find the podcast player there ready and waiting for you. Okay, well, apologies, we are a few days later than we normally would be, but let's wrap up what happened in Hungary, roughly, shall we? It was actually the start of the second half of the season. It was round 11 of 20. Slow burner of a race. I actually got to watch it live, which was nice. And it actually felt, Kyle, like it promised a lot, the race, as it was going along. It was just one that just didn't quite deliver in the end, as opposed to some where they look dead and buried and then all of a sudden they come to life. This one promised a lot and probably didn't deliver that much in the end.
No, so looking back in the race, I don't know how I felt about the race. It was obviously quite interesting all the way through because you had the top four within the start finish straight of each other for most of the race, but then it was just really frustrating at the same time because the car seemed to hit this second behind the car in front barrier and that was as far as they could go, and that's obviously an issue of the track and maybe the regulations this year.
Yeah, we were kind of fearing we might see a lot more of this, actually. Yeah. I mean, in fairness, round 11 is the first time we've probably really seen this aerodynamic force field really hit these 2017 cars.
Yeah, so as we were, I was worried before the start of the season that this could be at most tracks. So we've had a really good season so far. So it wasn't a bad race because, like I said, it was interesting at times, but just it was frustrating because you eventually thought, well, actually, nobody's going to overtake unless there's a huge error. And he saw it with Hamilton a few times, I think behind Kimi Raikkonen, who's just pushing it, but just the amount of dirty air was just pushing him wide, and unfortunately nothing did happen.
Oh, it was frustrating watching the gap between Kimi and Lewis, and you go, he's under DRS, oh, he's made a mistake. Oh, there's always something that just kept it away from being a real battle.
Yeah, I think the best way I could describe that whole race was almost the classic infuriating Formula One race, because it had everything that's great about Formula One, with team orders, controversy, hard racing at times, but then also the problems we've had recently of not being able to overtake. And of course it's just that you know, from an outside point of view, for people looking in, who I speak to pretty much every day at work, and I talk to them about Formula One, I keep saying, no, this is going to be a good race, this is going to be great. And they come back and they say, what was the race like? I say, it's impossible to describe because it was there was the front four, you can almost say, weren't really racing as such because of the problems we had with overtaking. Whether some of that was down to the circuit, I suppose, is fair enough.
It's all the camel's fault.
Yeah. No, make the circuit twice as wide, keep it the same shape. But it's just one of the characteristics about that circuit. And, you know, when you see four cars that close, you've got Raikkonen who says, I can go faster, let me attack Ferrari, say no. You've got Mercedes just say, let your teammate through, let him have a go, he can go faster. It's just, it's typical Formula One, isn't it? It's just everything about it.
It was, they were almost chasing rather than racing in a way, wasn't it? It was a lot of that. Sebastian Vettel, the winner, he did really well to hang on, considering at times it looked like it was going to be beyond him. And Ferrari, in general, did really well in terms of a response to what, of course, happened in front of us, almost definitely really in front of us at Silverstone. But I guess I want to talk about Mercedes initially, because what a thing for them to have done, to have allowed Lewis Hamilton to ahead of Valtteri Bottas to have a go and see if he could get past Kimi, giving him what seemed like a ridiculously short amount of time in terms of five laps that they then duly extended. We've been joined by my cat Tallulah. She's a big Formula One fan, should be added. So they gave Lewis this chance, but on the promise that he would let Valtteri back. And it was remarkable how they managed to time it without Max taking a place off either of them as well. So much trouble, so precise, all for them to basically give up 3 points in the driver's standings to Seb. I mean, it's wonderful. I find it absolutely brilliant. And I'm personally, I have no issue with Lewis Hamilton, and I'm not a fanboy, but I really respect Lewis in many ways. And that's a fantastic thing for him to have done. But I mean, it's quite entirely feasible he'll lose the championship by 3 points or less.
But could Bottas win the championship by 3 points?
No.
No, not at all. Not at all. I don't think he will, but you never know. It might happen. It was very nice of Lewis, because especially the fact that Bottas dropped so far behind him and that he had to slow down, what, 7 seconds was it? The gap?
Well, I would have said that Valtteri proved he couldn't keep up, so therefore he kind of gave up his right to retake the place, personally.
Yeah, I was sort of arguing that. And also the fact that Verstappen was up Bottas' arm. Well, Verstappen was so close to Bottas, the skill actually that Hamilton had to... That was the only place he could do it. If he'd done it early in the track, he would have been a danger of being overtaken and dropped down to fifth place. That was the only place he could do it. So it's quite a bit of skill. And just brain awareness, or where the word is, just to think, I'll do it at that point. But maybe you kind of think a nice gesture like that, he'll benefit from it later on in the season. And if he's 30, 40 points ahead, we'll say 6 races to go. I mean, it's not mathematically that Bottas is out of the championship, but Mercedes might have a nice little word with Bottas after he's just agreed his new contract, possibly, and say, would you mind supporting Hamilton for the rest of the year? And that might work out for him in that way.
But... Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's a fair point. I mean, obviously, Valtteri's contract, having a only be running for this year, is a very good point. And it might make them stronger. I mean, ultimately, whether I feel Seb is probably favourite for the driver's title, I'd probably always feel that Mercedes were favourite for the Constructors' Championship in a bizarre way.
Yeah, I think what Mercedes have proven as well is they've got two drivers who will happily work together. Whereas Vettel and Raikkonen, they work together because they're told to by the mafia, effectively.
Well, yeah.
They had the big boss there this weekend, and of course he was watching the race. And there comes the magic call that Raikkonen is not allowed to attack Vettel, despite all these calls saying, I'm quicker, I can do this. Let me try. And I would love to see, you know, for the sake of Formula One being motorsport and racing, you'd love to see them actually race each other. But then you would love to see Hamilton go and overtake Bottas. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's that same problem which comes down to the cars being able to race each other hard. But then also, it's the kind of thing, is Raikkonen going to retire as well? Because if he retires for next season, looking ahead a long way, if Raikkonen retires because he's had enough, who are Ferrari going to get, and who's going to be happy to play second fiddle to Vettel?
I mean, have we ever seen two Ferraris really race each other? I mean, I struggle to ever think where we've had two Ferraris properly race each other. I mean, you talk about next year. I'm pretty sure it was mentioned during the weekend that Ferrari are set to announce Kimi and Seb as their 2018 lineup, probably come the Monza weekend.
The strong rumours of the weekend that was going to happen, which is...
Go on, Kyle, what's your word? It is.
It's crazy. We talk about mid-season predictions. I think I made a prediction 2 years ago that Raikkonen would stay on, and I think everybody else laughed at me.
Yeah, we did. Last year I said it'd be his, definitely be his last season. Yeah. Definitely 2016 was going to be his last year.
That's, it's just, obviously, because he I'm surprised Raikkonen seems quite happy to play second fiddle to Vettel. I mean, he's world champion. Does he need? He doesn't need to do this. Doesn't particularly think he needs the money.
It must go through his mind, wasn't it? Yeah. Like on Sunday, yeah. And around the Hungara Ring, they're not letting me race here. What's the point?
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. What is the point of Kimi Raikkonen in 2018? Yeah, I just don't get it. And it's a shame that it's sort of blocking the driver market, because people like Perez or I don't know, Sainz or whatever are not getting that opportunity when they probably deserve it now.
And it comes to that stage as well where he is taking the space of someone much younger who's got a much promising future, because you look at the test that's just happened. I forget the guy's name, but it was was it Leclerc who was driving the Ferrari?
Yeah.
He was looking pretty fast, and he said he was ready for Formula One. And of course, you got Mercedes' young driver in local boy George Russell, and you had Lando Norris driving the McLaren and everything. You've got these young drivers who seem to be ready to step up and handle the pressures of Formula One, but they're not getting that chance at the minute.
We will come on to that very soon too. Just a little bit more on what happened around the Hungara Ring, the battle between the Red Bulls, the Red Bull collision. What was it Daniel Ricciardo said? It wasn't who I thought it was it? Yes, it was. I mean, really unnecessary. I actually think probably a little bit unfortunate, because the contact itself didn't seem that bad. I don't think you'd normally see a contact like that end a race. It was just that he happened to destroy his radiator, which seemed really unfortunate. Not taking away from the fact you don't do that to your teammate.
Yeah, I think Stefan was a bit unlucky. I suppose he was just trying to make spaces and places at the start of the race. He just got it particularly wrong and locked up. And I think even Christian Horner admitted that he probably ran off the track. He just got it really badly wrong. I think Red Bull seemed to deal with it quite well. I think obviously Ricciardo was a bit emotional straight as soon as he gets out of the car in front of the camera and stuff. And
he was pissed.
Yeah, but I think he's probably calmed down later on, and at the end of the day, as Verstappen had a fair amount of bad luck this year, and they're not fighting for a championship, so it's not really the end of the world.
You can say that. I mean, Max has apologised, and I'm sure Daniel took it, and away we go.
That really did annoy me, that whole scenario, because it just seemed, you know, he's racing hard, that's what all the drivers do at the start, and he just seemed to lock up and, you know, obviously messed his braking point up a long way and went wide and ran into him. But we've seen that happen with a lot of drivers. And you think, if you're going to penalise contact there, I mean, there was an incident between Hülkenberg and Grosjean, which went unpenalised, and then there was another one with Magnussen and Hülkenberg. They weren't all too dissimilar. There were differences, obviously, in what happened. They weren't massively dissimilar in the way things were done. And, of course, there was some got penalised and some didn't.
I think there was some suggestion that Max's penalty was, in terms of the actual race, was similar to what Seb got for deliberately driving into Lewis back at Baku, but I don't know if that's actually... I only half caught that line, so I don't know if that's actually true or not.
10 second. It was similar, because Vettel had a stop go, and it was just a 10 second penalty for Verstappen. So, but you know, he still had to perform at a pit stop. It just means you're saving an extra 20 seconds for driving through the pit lane.
I mean, actually, without those 10 seconds, Max would have been right up involved in contention. And it's clearly good signs for Red Bull in terms of their upgrades and what have you. We'll have to see whether it's the upgrades that are what we're talking about come the second half of the season, or the drivers getting pissed off at each other. We'll see how it goes. One final mention, Williams. Paul Di Resta had to step in for Felipe Massa after FP3, wasn't it?
Yeah.
After FP3 on the Saturday, having never driven a 2017 car, not only did he not qualify last, he basically kept completely out of trouble. And, well, it was a DNF in the end, but I mean, he was running ahead of several cars who hadn't finished, who'd already retired. Just phenomenal effort.
It's incredible. Yes, probably 2 hours before qualifying, and you jump in and do... Was he 7 or 8 tenths off Stroll? And he qualified ahead of Ericsson. It's a shame that Williams wasn't competitive this weekend, because it'd been interesting to see what he could have done. But, I mean, he was a good driver. It was a shame he sort of left Formula 1. Because he was always quite competitive with Hülkenberg and Perez, but unfortunately, lack of spaces and he had to leave. But he's sort of talking about maybe getting back into it, but I think it's probably a bit too late for him. But I think it shows that's how worthy it is to have a good reserve driver just available, because instead of a more competitive car, you need somebody just to pick up some points occasionally. He might have done that in a a strong track for Williams.
Yeah, spot on. I think the thing with Paul di Resta was he came onto the scene and did really well. It just got a bit dull, didn't it? And then we almost sort of lost the interest in him in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really did prove, you know, how good these drivers are, even the reserve drivers who turn up every weekend, they can just suddenly step in. That was, you know, it really was a phenomenal effort. And I think in qualifying, if you look at the first lap time he set to the final one, to his fastest one, the improvement was something ridiculous for your first laps in that car. That just shows, you know, how these drivers can adapt so quickly and so easily to these cars. It was phenomenal. And yeah, you know, top effort.
Top effort indeed. Right, plug time. If you want to make sure you never miss an episode of the NRF1 podcast, then you know what to do. You get subscribed through your podcast player of choice. All you need to do is visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe and you'll find the link for you, be it iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, all those gubbins. And if yours isn't there or you want to contact us for any reason whatsoever, we love hearing from you. Just email us at nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Right, shall we fire up the NRF1 pit stops? Okay. Now, rather than just Hungary, this is as much about the test that took place at the Hungaro Ring after the Grand Prix weekend, as well as looking towards the summer break too. Let's start probably at the most obvious place, which is Renault, of course. Robert Kubica back. He was fourth fastest, I think, on the test on the Wednesday. The first time he's driven a 2017 Renault. He drove the equivalent of two Grand Prix distances, racked up the laps. And what's more, the pit was so excited, the sign fell down as he left the carriage. Loads of Polish fans there. I mean, the scenes are fantastic. If you want to see them, then check out our social media feeds. We've got videos on there of what it was like around the Hungaro Ring. Brilliant to see. He didn't sound particularly happy with how it went necessarily, because I think he probably wanted more. And what happens next is clearly the big question. As great as this is, and as great as Renault have done, as Ped said a couple of weeks, brilliant story for them. What now?
It's a shame we lost Kubica in the first place, because he was regarded as up there with Hamilton and Vettel. I mean, even Hamilton this week described him as one of the best drivers he's raced against. May have just been being nice, but he, you know, his performance has sort of backed up. It would be a nice story to see him back, but I think you'd only want him back if he was the old Kubica and still had the ability of the old Kubica, because, as we sort of said earlier, would it be just be wasting a space and a nice little story for a couple of years? But is he blocking a knock-on or a younger driver coming through? Does he do more tests? I don't know. Suppose he can test old machinery, but is that good enough for Renault to sort of gauge how good he is? But I think Renault sort of three tests he's done the last 2 months, so yeah. They're spending a bit of money on him. So yeah. Obviously, you kind of think they've seen something. So that's, yeah, I really don't know where they go.
I mean, at this point they have to keep him in 2017 machinery if they're serious about bringing him on, so I guess FP1s is an option. Yeah. And then you've got an actual fair comparison to whoever then comes in FP2. You could really have a look at the because it's all about the speed at this point, isn't it? They need to know how quick he is, and as you rightly say, Kyle, it's a great story. First few races will be awesome. After that, if it's not, you know, if there isn't the spark there, you know what the news agendas are like. It'll move on pretty swiftly and they'll be like, oh, time to get someone else in.
Yeah, it would be nice to see him back, because you know the races we had when you know him and Hamilton racing each other were good, clean, hard racing, which we like to see. I think, to be honest, the closest he'll get to a race seat is being reserve driver at this stage, until he has, you know, like you say, really proves in a free practice session how quick he is. I wouldn't be surprised to see him have a practice session second half of the season in place of Palmer, in Palmer's car, basically, because he's been shipped out of the car I don't know how many times at the start for Sorokin. So yeah, I mean, I could see that happening. But you know, with Kubica coming back in, if they say, okay, we'll give you the driver's seat, Sorokin sits, you know, sitting there at number three at the minute saying, what about me? And you know, are they suddenly going to overlook him and get someone back in? It's going to be interesting to see how they do that.
It's probably Renault. They seem to have a lot of sort of reserve drivers at the moment. They've got Sorokin, Oliver Rowland, who's doing really well in GP2, or sorry, F2. Nicholas Latifi, being tested the other day as well, and he's doing a F2. And there seems to be quite a few people after Julian Palmer's seat. So yeah, where do they go really? And they seem to be spending a lot of money on reserve drivers, but they've got to make a choice, I think, at some point.
Well, you remember what came up last season about each team having three cars?
Oof. Yeah, they'd be so lucky.
Get a B team.
Get a
young drivers team.
Well, I think was it Martin Brundle, I think, put out a tweet this week and said something like, you know, so many good young talent, we need 26 cars on the grid next year. And back in whenever it was, there was 39 cars on the grid. You can only imagine.
I think we noticed that from Silverstone, how big some of the other fields were. And then you get to Formula One, it's 20 cars, and you know, there feels like there is room for more cars on the track, most definitely. Interesting, just from that conversation there, we clearly sound less inclined to think that Julian Palmer's season is over.
I was for the weekend, I think I probably was thinking he probably won't be there after summer, but I've kind of got a feeling, I sort of changed my mind a bit. I think he'll be around for at least the European parts of the rest of the season. So he had an okay weekend. Obviously, he had to let Hülkenberg through during the race. So he's probably the position he seemed to do it very easily. It's probably the position he's in within the team that he's got to try and be good to them in a way.
Finished ahead of him though, as I predicted. I did cheer actually at the moment that Nico Hülkenberg retired. I'll shamelessly admit, because I got my prediction right.
That was exactly the same as me, so don't feel bad about that.
Brilliant, that's the way. Let's rattle through some of these other ones, shall we? And you touched on them earlier, Rich. McLaren tested with Lando Norris around the Hungaro Ring, a British driver. We asked a few weeks and it came up, you know, if Lewis just jacks it in, who's the Brit we need to get behind? We've got a few, obviously, actually, now we look at it. Lando Norris, it's quick, wasn't he?
I remember seeing him in the British Formula 4 Championship supporting the touring cars. I think it was two seasons ago when he won that championship. He was a quick driver. And I mean, he's named after a Star Wars character, so...
Is that right?
I don't know, it's Lando, isn't it? So... That's fake facts right there.
Fake news, fake facts. I love it, Kyle.
Yeah, I think I sort of heard of him last year, and this young lad coming through, and he's F3 championship this year, and he's first season, he's winning races and on pole position, and McLaren signed him up. And I mean, you never know with tests, the fuel loads and tyres and blah blah blah. But to be 0.2 off Sebastian Vettel's time, second quickest of the day. First time in the car this year, only 17. From a British motorsport point of view, it's pretty exciting to think we could have another superstar from these islands. So
I love it. Kyle is excited, I can tell. At Mercedes, of course, it was George Russell who got a go. Norfolk's own George Russell, who hopefully we can get on the podcast. I'm working on it. What do you make of him? Because, I mean, you know, if you wanted to be a young driver on the way through, at the moment you'd want to be queuing up to sit in a Mercedes.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing every GP3 championship. He had a tough weekend. I think he had a bit of a Julian Palmer race on the Saturday where he couldn't start the race due to a technical problem. But he's doing well in that championship. The fact that they trusted him to do 2 days of testing means obviously Mercedes are pretty keen on him. I don't know if he actually got a chance to do a quick qualifying lap. I think it's more sort of set up and testing various things, but yeah, I think it's good signs for him as well. So it'd be interesting to see what he does next year.
Yeah, won't it just? I just want to touch on Sauber. They have confirmed they will not be having Honda engines next year. In fact, I think it will be Ferrari. Yeah, Carl's nodding. And also, Pascal Wehrlein under a bit of pressure. It sounds like he might not be there next year, which I guess might be as a result of the engine switch.
Yeah, Ferrari suggested that Sauber will now be a Ferrari junior team. B team. And especially with Charles Leclerc doing so well in F2, and the only problem, they want to be that, but I can't see how they're going to get rid of Ericsson, because Ericsson's friends are the money behind the team, so I can't really see how they're going to get rid of him. But
he'll just sit there. He'll just sit there and he'll just carry on. It's not all over for Honda though, although of course McLaren have not divorced just yet, but Toro Rosso apparently are trying to sort out a Honda deal. Rich, you're laughing.
Why would anyone on the grid currently look around and go, "Oh, Honda, that's a good option"?
They've just come second in the test. Yeah. That's great. You know, that is real facts.
I was going to say, both of them finished a race on Sunday. Reliability's there.
Pace there. They did look quicker. In fairness, they did look quicker at the weekend. I mean, come on, Rich.
Was it last year their best result was fifth place, I think, at somewhere? And
fifth? That's awesome.
That was, yeah, last season. And look at the start of this season. They started again going, "We know this engine business now. We're going to rebuild a new one." And it shook itself to bits.
It shook itself to what a line that is, brilliant stuff. What I also wanted to point out is a quick browse of the Autosport website today, and you will see a lot of stories going on about how great the Halo is, how they will push the boundaries in terms of what they can do with Halo in terms of the FIA. Our own George Russell going on about how the visibility surprised him, it was so good. Obviously, this is like the positive backlash to the initial backlash of the Halo stories. Are we feeling any warmer towards this protection?
No. I'm worried that eventually I'll accept it. It's just, Formula One needs the drivers to be the stars, and they're already hidden away. Quite right, because at the moment I think they had to go down the route they are, where their drivers are quite covered. That's fair enough. You can still see the helmets. I just think you're taking away part of the sort of the gladiator part of being an F1 driver, and I'm not, obviously cleverer people than me have obviously designed this, but I'm not too sure it's going to make a huge amount of difference. And I think Will Buxton tweeted, I don't know if he just tweeted it randomly, that they've extended the extraction time or time to get out of the car, which didn't make much sense to me that they've changed that rule. So
That's surely more important, that you get the driver out of the car in all such situations quicker than where the one particular situation that's kind of a freak of nature, if it happens, freak of circumstance at least, you've stopped that happening yet. By much?
No, he didn't say the amount, but surely that the time they had at the moment, there's a reason for that time, and they've extended it just to bring in the Halo. It just seems a bit rushed, and it's like they had to be seen to be doing something. I have adjusted that they brought in the virtual safety cars and various other things, Formula One. Look at the tracks as well, make them safer. Like MotoGP, unfortunately, the young lad, Louis Salom, died last year. There's nothing to change the way the bikes are. It was, okay, we need to change the corners at Catalunya. We need to change the way corner at Catalunya to make that safer. So there's other ways to go about it. And I think it's just gone too far.
I mean, we've clearly talked a lot about it. I mean, it feels a bit stubborn to me, but it also will be something that I think is irreversible once it comes in. Rich, I don't know if you had a chance to say your piece. So,
I think basically with the Halo, the most I can say is it's being introduced. We're going to have to deal with it whether we like it or not. But this is Formula One, which is, you know, looked at as one of the greatest technological sports in the world. Surely they can come up with a way of keeping the Halo as safe as it is and making it look cool as well at the same time,
which is what we'll hope we see. I'm sure they will. They do that well, Formula One. They do that well.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers. Right, so this is a kind of an amalgam podcast, a bit of bits and pieces and everything. So I've got a mini bit of tweets and social here for us. We've got a little message from Simon Alexander Weber on our Facebook page, which is, of course, fb.me/thenrf1. Just to show we don't all get positive messages. And then this isn't hang anything out to dry. Simon says, why do you only talk about the top in F1? And when you talk about the rest, you don't give them the time of day. You sound self-centered and supercilious. Which, you know, Simon, completely, absolutely fine with your opinion. No doubt about that. And it's good to open the dialogue. I don't know if we obviously try and keep the podcast shorter than maybe some will do. I know some of the guys out there do brilliant jobs and they will do hour-long podcasts and they'll get proper stock in. We try and do shorter ones, bite-sized, but maybe more frequent and on individual themes. And, you know, we've got the NRF1 pit stops. So we try and go through the grid, but we'll take your board points on board. I don't know if we could deliberately be self-centered. I don't know if we could deliberately sound self-centered. I would have thought we were probably more likely to sound clueless. But you know, we will try and get on the right side of clueless from now on, Simon. But thanks for your message, and most importantly, I hope you keep listening and change your opinion. Which would always be good, because it means we'd be doing the right things. Allow me to do some plugs, shall I? You can follow us on all our social media channels, and of course you can get in touch with us on those too. It's great to hear from you all, good or bad. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the handle is the same, at the NRF1. And make sure, of course, you send us any of your thoughts via email, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And the website is nrf1.uk. You'll find blogs, stats, the latest prediction league standings, all that sort of gumph over the course of the summer break, so that should keep you a little bit busy. Let's bring you then, shall we, our awards, our of the weekends. That's first, at least, our of the weekend. So for Hungary, let's rattle through these. Rodolfo Gonzalez, driver of the Hungaro Ring weekend.
Does it have to be Alonso for his the fastest lap on the
yes,
last, yeah, it was last lap, wasn't it? Fastest lap on the last lap. Yeah, pretty impressive, wasn't it?
And then going under the podium, yes, while they were spraying the champagne to sit by a lovely picture they'd drawn of him in his deck chair, and sit in a dick chair with a deck chair, or dick chair, with a sign saying, "Have a happy holidays." I mean, you'd have thought a part of Fernando would have been like, "Oh, for f*** sake, I'm not on the podium." But instead it was like, "I'm going to sit here and be cool instead." Brilliant. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, I think the only one I'd add to that is De Resta.
Yes.
Just because it's a British driver, which of course we love on this podcast. But just for, you know, stepping in last minute and having the time of his life.
Spot on. Team, Ferrari, but don't want to be accused of only concentrating on the top cars, though.
This is the debatable one here, though. You can say, I don't know if this is top or bottom, because they're kind of in between, but McLaren, they got a double points finish.
I think McLaren's a great shout.
Yeah, I think McLaren, yeah. I mean, they're at the, where were they? Last in the championship before the race?
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah, too true. I'd mention for our Pastor Maldonado of the weekend, probably could have been Jolyon, because in qualifying and in free practice he was desperately trying to fuck up his weekend really hard, breaking all parts of his cars without replacement parts. He lost his front wing, didn't he? And that meant that he lost the only new front wing. Then we had to go back to the old one because that was the only spares they had.
I think he just ran over a curb for that. I think he's a bit unlucky with the front.
Oh, a little bit unlucky. Yeah, a little bit unlucky. Well, I suppose Max could be Pastor.
Yeah, I was never crashing too, teammate.
Unless you're at Toro Rosso or Sauber, where it's freely accepted.
But yeah, I think Kvyat, really. He's got more penalty points on his license. Yeah. I mean, he gets two more before USA. I think we get a race ban. I mean,
wow. USA, he won't be allowed in a car in general. He won't be able to drive anywhere.
Because USA's end of October, that sort of time, isn't it? It's towards the end of the season, isn't it? So he's got a few issues.
Pastor Rich?
See, now this is, I'm going to get a lot of hate for saying this, but I kind of want to say Ricciardo.
Oh.
Because basically, emotions were running high, also when he was interviewed after the crash and everything. So what he said can be taken out, you know, from that. But he's got this kind of image of being the happy, cheery, always smiling, nothing gets to him kind of guy. Even when something bad happens, you know, he'll follow up by saying, "Oh, that's right, you know, next week can't go as bad as this one has," or something. And he's really liked because of that. And in this week, he just totally lost his I mean, I like him. He's a good driver. But I felt really bad for Verstappen, that he was still racing with, you know, still going on. He didn't deliberately crash into Ricciardo, and he was straight on there and having good whinge and really kind of slating him. And I was like, you don't need to do that. As his teammate, you can stand there with him and support him.
Okay, and highlight of the weekend? I mean, as I said, the way that Lewis managed to somehow gift 3 points back to Sebastian by being so lovely at the end was rather remarkable, and that left everyone with a warm, fuzzy feeling, especially Seb.
Yeah, I thought it was, yeah, the skill, as I said earlier, to do that. I did enjoy the battle between Hülkenberg and the two Haas drivers, and Magnussen telling Hülkenberg to suck his Danish balls or
yeah, how have I not mentioned that was supposed to be in here, but it's not. But yes, head over to the social media feeds where you'll see the great moment where where Nico Hülkenberg has a bit of a sarcastic argument with Kevin Magnussen in the pen.
Hamilton style from
it was. Exactly. And Kevin's reply was, "Suck my balls." And then he was just sort of smiled back at the interviewer. It's absolutely brilliant. I think that was going to go down in infamy. Well, I don't remember the battle. It was the battle on track, was it?
Yeah, I think because Magnussen moaned early on, didn't he? I think when Hülkenberg in the first corner sort of drifted wide and hit Grosjean, and Magnussen said, "Oh, this is where it's going to be. It's going to be a dirty race." And he thought, "Well, it's a bit extreme." And then also they had a bit of coming together later on. But Magnussen sort of pushed Hülkenberg wide, didn't he? The sort of second corner. But
yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, but I didn't realise. So Magnussen sort of always seems sort of the quiet guy of the grid, but maybe he isn't. Maybe he's quite a feisty sort of Scandinavian.
I guess they've all got there. They've all got an edge to them. Yes, that's the reality of it, isn't it? Absolutely. That said, nothing compared to Sebastian Buemi after the Formula E Prix. I think we've retweeted that, haven't we? Yeah. So if you go on to at the NRF1 on Twitter, you can watch Sebastian Buemi basically take down any driver in front of him. It's the most brilliant video. He just goes f***ing ape. It's absolutely glorious. You have to watch it.
The best bit was that, then he was disqualified like an hour later for an underweight car. So all that, and then he's disqualified.
One of those three drivers probably took a couple of wheels off and removed some ballast on the quiet. I wouldn't blame them. Okay, it just leaves us to rate the race, I think, unless you had a highlight. Did you have a highlight, Rich?
No. Just the fiery Dane, I think, is all I can say.
The fiery Dane. I have to say, I was able to watch the race on Sky Sports Live. Didn't quite remember David Croft being as annoying as he actually is. That seemed to strike me. Maybe it was just a one-off. Who knows?
I'll tell you though, what really annoyed me was I was watching the Channel 4 highlights, and I can't remember what happened, but it was really late at night when I got home because I was out. I had a beer and I was in my happy place. And something happened on the TV, and I was shouting, saying, "This has happened, this has happened." And I shouted it four times, and then 30 seconds later, David Coulthard goes, "Oh, look, this has happened." It sounded all smug. It's like, you idiot.
Just
my little whinge of the day.
No, there's nothing wrong with that at all, Rich. Well said. Right, I think that only leaves us to rate the race. We do this out of 11, obviously. Azerbaijan was a 12. British Grand Prix, I think 8.75 ended up being, which is pretty high. Canada 9, Austria 7. They're the benchmarks. They're the only ones we've rated so far. I'll go first. I'm probably going to give it a 7.5.
Oh, that's quite high.
I mean, Austria. I can't remember Austria now, to be honest. Was Austria good enough to warrant a 7? I'm not entirely sure it was.
Did Bottas win Austria? Was he being chased down by Vettel at the end and all that?
What about this one?
I'm going to go 5.5.
Oh, geez. Yeah. So, worst race simply without racing. Rating.
I'm sort of trying to leave myself a bit of room for later races.
Yeah, because we really haven't done that so far. Rich?
As I kind of got the deciding factor to where it's going to lie, I'm going to go 6.5. So,
nice. Yeah, bang in. That is 6.5 then, isn't it? Worst race we've rented so far. I don't know if I'd agree with that, but there we go. That's the way.
It's average. It's half. It's dead in the middle because we saw the good and the bad.
Yeah, spot on. I'm just overly excited about these things sometimes. Right, bonus segment. Without warning, guys, we're going to do the Of the Weekend Awards, only for the Of the Half of the Season Awards. So, there we go. Our Rodolfo Gonzalez driver of the first half of the season. I've done as much preparation as you guys have done on this. So, I've not got a clue. Who wants to go first?
Just see mine. Just looking at the season results, and I go for Esteban Ocon.
Yes.
The fact that only one race this year he hasn't finished in the points, and that was the 12th. This is his first full year in Formula 1. He's competing pretty well against Perez, who is sort of regarded as a possible Ferrari driver if Raikkonen ever moves on. Ocon is my driver.
I like that. Rich?
Yeah. Funny thing is I just flicked up the results and looking at them, and Ocon did stand out. So I would totally agree with that.
I mean, that is a very, very good shout. I wouldn't really be able to top that. I guess one thing you say is how well Valtteri Bottas is doing compared to Lewis Hamilton. He's probably pushing him a bit harder than I thought he would. Sebastian Vettel is obviously leading the championship and seems to be back on form. I thought he really dug out the win in Hungary. And maybe Daniel Ricciardo, because I actually thought he'd get outshone by Max Verstappen, and luck or not, he's outperforming him so far when he's not being shunted, obviously. Team of the first half of the season, I mean, Force India really is a really good shout, because again, they just keep excelling.
And as I sort of said before, the budget from the way they compete, it's difficult to go against them. Obviously Ferrari for the big gains they've made, but that's a bit boring.
Mercedes are quick, blah blah.
Well,
that was a good moment, wasn't there, when they exchanged the place back right on the line really successfully, and Toto Wolff gave it a big old and then looked round at Niki Lauda, who didn't look best pleased at all.
Okay, I haven't seen that. Possibly have.
There's a video clip somewhere.
But he was, of course, a Ferrari driver, Niki Lauda, so he kind of came through the whole scene, I suppose, of number one, number two driver.
Yeah.
I mean, that's debatable, I suppose. But.
Yeah, I like that. I like that thinking. Pastor goat of the season so far. I mean, Honda. I think probably. I mean, Romain Grosjean, for someone who we used to have high hopes for, strikes me as someone who's going to perennially fail to deliver. A bit harsh there, maybe.
The brakes on the Haas car could be another one, because that's had a lot of trouble.
Although I think they've had a pretty, I'm slightly biased, but I think they've had a pretty good season.
They have, Haas.
Got the same amount of points already as they had last year. So
it's a good start.
So is it in their second season?
Mind, they had a really good start last season as well. So
they got a couple of sixth places, didn't they? Straight out of the
box. Probably could be. Just a dreadful season, really, isn't it?
He is literally going to be torpedoed. I think that's probably what's going to happen. And highlight, I mean, I don't think anything's going to excel Baku for years, to be honest. So
Lance Stroll, just seeing the excitement that was there, the podium, and all that went with that race, it was incredible.
And do you actually mean the fact that you came up with his nickname?
I mean, that is, of course, I mean, I'm going to sound so self-centered now, but that of course was the best moment in history. So
the walking weapon, and it will stick, absolutely. Still not had a reply from Williams yet on Twitter, so still waiting for that one. Kyle,
probably like I said, the Vettel Hamilton incident in Baku, it's just, I'm gonna look back at it, it's just a bit like a Senna Prost at the chicane at Suzuka sort of moment. It's just a craziness, and it will probably, where the season goes, may sort of escalate the story even more, because if Vettel just wins it with Hamilton close by, then we'll look back on that moment as a big moment.
Looking at as a whole on the first half of the season as well, we've had it simmering away for years with Hamilton and Vettel having a fight on the track, and it's never really happened in a fair way. This season we've got two really fast cars, cars with their advantages and disadvantages at different circuits, and two of the best drivers in the world, going to fight it out. It's going to be an incredible end to the season.
Yeah, spot on at two separate teams as well. And just wonder, as you're kind of saying, Kyle, however this second half of the season pans out, we may have to refer to this, and you don't know, that could be only the first incident of them driving into each other, breaking each other's suspension. We'll have to see. It's going to be fascinating. What a perfect moment to send us into the summer break, and we will be having a break, just for the record. You won't be getting any podcasts over the next few weeks, mainly for my sanity, and with the football season kicking in as well. That's quite a big deal here in Norfolk. So if you want to become an honorary Norwich City fan, do that as well. You'll find me on there. But in terms of the Formula One, some things to plug here. The NRF1 Grand Prix is on its way. September the 3rd, which I believe is also the date of the Monza Italian Grand Prix. Hadn't quite figured that out, but never mind. It's going to be at Ella Park in Beccles on Sunday, September the 3rd, that afternoon. We're going to get the people, guys here, and maybe a few other people we know from Norfolk and the media scene, and friends of the podcast and whichever, to take part in a proper karting Grand Prix. We're hopefully going to get audio, we're going to get video, and going to make a big odd show for it. If for some reason you're in the vicinity and you want to come along, then please do just email us nrf1podcast@gmail.com, and we can let you know all the details close to the time. But it'll basically be that afternoon. I imagine it'll be free entry, and you'll come along and watch the likes of us drive off a kart track, apart from Kyle, who of course knows the track very well. But that should be a great afternoon, and hopefully we'll have some fun and games and all sorts, as well as the track action. So take that in, and we'll certainly let you know how it goes afterwards as well. We will return the week before Spa and the Belgian Grand Prix with our mid-season predictions and more, as I said at the top of the podcast, and we'll probably do three podcasts in 3 days because of course that's the way we do it. And as I said, in the meantime, keep all over our social media feeds and especially nrf1.uk to see what we're doing. But for now, that is the first half of the season, and that is it for the podcast. And edition 188 is a goodbye from the guests. Goodbye from Kyle.
Goodbye. Happy summer.
Happy summer indeed. Goodbye, Rich.
Goodbye.
Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/nrf1. And thanks to Future Radio for hosting us again. This has been the NRF1 podcast. Take a few moments to rest those F1 eyes and get refreshed and ready for what is set to be a stellar second half of the 2017 Formula One season. And we'll be back quicker than it takes Kevin Magnussen to say, suck my balls. Until then, goodbye.